Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Union density, new numbers from last year. Wages up, membership down. Well, run it all down. Making chips in America again. I'm not talking about the Frito-Lay kind either. And today on the show, it's the carpenters out of Virginia and the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Monday, January 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Jason Wheeler is going to be our first guest on the show, and he comes to us from Carpenters Local 205, which covers the majority of the state of Virginia and actually 10 counties in North Carolina. This local was formed in February of 2016. Through the merger of the previous locals, that would be 388 in Richmond and 613 in Norfolk. The carpenters had a presence in Virginia since 1899, and that is essentially 8 years after the carpenters were formed. It's the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, and they were established in 1881. So we're going to talk about construction. Carpenters205.org is your website, by the way. We'll talk about how the build-out is in Virginia. Again, we're talking about a right-to-work state going back 70-plus years. Big problem in the construction industry, as you well know, is wage theft. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the politics. Is there a chance that right-to-work may be turned around? Maybe not now. They're still fighting, though. Still fighting. There's another interesting thing we're going to get into. It's called Mix 2020. The local, again, this is 205, now dispatches jobs through an automated system called Mix 2020. All members are encouraged to sign up and update their working status. And it's just another tool in the toolbox to communicate with workers in the field. Mix 2020, that should be interesting. Greg Reagan will be joining us later in the show, and he comes to us from the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Three things we're going to get into. Biden's first year in office, and if you pay attention to the media, and there's polling showing that Biden is doing a horrible job as president, and something like 27% think he's doing okay, which shows a clear majority claiming that America is on the wrong track. I don't know if it's a PR thing. I know prices are going up and there's been conflicts. You saw what happened in Afghanistan, now Ukraine. You mix that all together, and anybody in office gets the blame for that. But Greg is taking a different point of view, as all members of labor are. And he looks at the American Rescue Plan, which goes back almost a year, as the biggest investment in infrastructure in U.S. history. Now, where's the PR on that? This has not happened before. Not happened before. Pro-union administration. Hear me talk about that all the time. Look at the changes at the NLRB. We'll get into the specifics of the rescue plan, and then we'll get into the infrastructure plan, recognizing America's essential transportation workers, millions of frontline transportation workers, have disproportionately shouldered the devastating effects of COVID-19. Greg says we are grateful to the Biden administration for recognizing these essential workers for their heroic efforts during the pandemic. On Labor Day, we proudly partnered with the U.S. Department of Transportation to formally recognize frontline transportation workers for their essential service during this unprecedented public health crisis. That has not happened before. Of course, we haven't had a pandemic in about 100 years either. We'll get into the specifics of the infrastructure bill. Also, bridge investment. The Federal Railroad Administration, apparently, The Senate has confirmed a new administrator. We'll talk about that. And lastly, new affiliates for the TTD. Over the past several weeks, the Transportation Trades Department has added three new union affiliates to its ranks. The Painters and Allied Trades, the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, a division of the Rail Conference of the Teamsters, and the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division. The reaffiliation of the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way and the engineers means that all of the rail industry unions, all of them, are now unified under the Transportation Trades Department, which has now 36 unions under them. The new one is the Painters and Allied Trades. Greg says the following: we know that 2022 will be a year of tremendous challenges as well as opportunities. Transportation labor will play a critical role in ensuring that the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is implemented in a way that grows good union jobs while rebuilding our nation's deteriorating transportation infrastructure and revitalizing our economy. So a lot of good things happening at the Transportation Trades Department. Website is ttd.org. Well, union membership declined last year by 241,000. This was pretty shocking to me because there were a lot of pockets of organizing in the United States. However, there was a lot of jobs that were lost too, union jobs. And they point out in, they being the Bureau of Labor Statistics, pointed out that the coronavirus most likely skewed those numbers. They surveyed 60,000 households nationwide. That's how they came up with these numbers. And as usual, if you're in a union, you're making more than those in a non-union. And the wage gap between union men and women was 10%, while it was 17%. In non-union jobs. The survey said 30% of all union members live in just two states. Can you believe that? California and New York. That's where density is the highest. Also the Northeast around the Great Lakes and the Pacific Coast states, including Nevada. Hawaii also edged out New York for number one in density. Union density in Hawaii is like 23%. It's just amazing. Turns out that 10.3% of all workers were in a union last year. That's down from 10.8%. So it's not that big of a drop, 10.8 to 10.3. That includes 6.2% of private sector workers. And how about this? 34% public sector. So one out of three workers in the public sector is a member of a union. That's precisely why you see conservatives attacking public sector unions. They don't like that density being that high. No. Trump did a really good job, a hatchet job in public sector. Just ask a member of the American Federation of Government Employees. The Bureau of Labor Statistics added that 2021 union membership figures should be properly compared to 2019. Before the pandemic actually happened. Comparisons with union membership measures for 2020, including the membership rate and medium usual weekly earnings, should be interpreted with caution. That came right from the Bureau. Now, let's get into some of the specifics here. Medium weekly earnings for all union workers, that's the point where half the group are above the figure and half below. That reached $1,169 last year, which was up $25 a week from 2020. Largest absolute numbers of union members. I mentioned California. Here's the actual number out there. 2.4 million. They were actually up 27,000, 16% density. New York, 1.7 million. They were up 68,000, So their density is 22.2%. Illinois, they had a boost in union membership, up 13,000 to 752,000. Washington State, Pennsylvania, 698,000. They were down 24,000. Density there just shy of 13%. New Jersey, 608,000. Up 8,000. Density 16.2%. State of Ohio, we dropped 41,000. 41,000 to 596,000. 12% union density. Michigan, boy, they got whacked. Down 64,000. You know what that has a lot to do with is the chips, lack of chips in the auto industry. That slowed down production. I'll get to that story. There's certainly some good news about that. In Michigan, 540,000 union members. Density is 13.3%. So, AFL-CIO, no comment on this. Again, numbers skewed a bit because of the coronavirus. Well, on Friday, big announcement in the state of Ohio outside of Columbus. Intel is going to build a semiconductor chip factory in New Albany. This is a $20 billion investment. $20 billion. And a lot of partners here. You had the state of Ohio and you had the Biden-Harris administration. In fact, the Labor Department sent out a release on Friday saying that the Biden-Harris administration had been working around the clock with Congress, our international allies and partners, and the private sector to expand chip manufacturing capacity and bring back critical American manufacturing jobs to alleviate the chip shortage. The announcement is the latest marker of progress in the administration's efforts to ramp up domestic manufacturing for critical goods like semiconductors, tackle near-term supply chain bottlenecks, revitalize our manufacturing base, and create good jobs here at home. The investment will create 7,000 construction jobs. Can you believe that? 7,000. And another 3,000 permanent jobs. To accelerate the progress, the president is urging the Congress to pass legislation to strengthen U.S. research and development in manufacturing for critical supply chains, including semiconductors. Now, the Senate passed the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. This was last June. And the administration is working with the House and the Senate to finalize that legislation. And that includes full funding for the CHIPS for America Act, which will provide $52 billion to jumpstart more private sector investments. And that's already happening since the beginning of last year, since Biden took office. Again, something else that he's not getting credit for. The semiconductor industry has announced nearly $80 billion in new investments in the country to 2025. And just a rundown here, Texas is getting a nice chunk. $17 billion Samsung factory. Texas Instruments investing $30 billion in Texas. In New York State, a new global foundries factory. There's $1 billion investment in a current plant dealing with technology and chips in North Carolina. Micron is expanding U.S. production. They haven't said exactly where they're going to be. But it's happening. It's happening. And Intel, giant corporation, been around a long time. Most of their production has been away from the United States. So it's certainly good news to see it coming back here and creating a lot of jobs, construction jobs, and jobs in those factories. All good news. All good news. All right, we're going to break right now. When we come back, we're going to check in with Jason Wheeler, Carpenters 205 out of Virginia.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Before we get to our first guest, I just want to thank the AFL-CIO. On Friday, they posted a slew of unions thanking President Biden for standing up for working people. I was talking about this in the intro of the show today. In fact, Greg Regan, on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department, is part of the email that went out. And various unions, I got a whole list here, the American Federation of Government Employees, AFSCME, the American Federation of Teachers, Lonnie Stevenson, president of the Electrical Workers, Don Marcus, Masters, Mates, and Pilots, Office of Professional Employees, Unite Here, list goes on and on and on. And they all sent out messages showing how President Biden helped them in the last year. Like I said, Biden's not getting much credit, but he certainly has helped a lot of workers, and he is certainly the most pro-union president since FDR, when you take a look at that. AFL-CIO.org for more information on that. Let's go to Jason Wheeler now. Jason is a council rep, business agent organizer for the Carpenters Local 205 out of the state of Virginia. Jason, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be talking to you today. Thanks for having me.
So you are telling me, I guess your website needs a little updating here. You're no longer in North Carolina. Apparently North Carolina is going to another local over there. Why don't you explain to me your jurisdictions? I understand it's pretty broad over there. And talk to me about yourself. Union member for what, 20 years now? Is that right?
That's correct. I've been a union member for 20 years. Came in right out of high school into our apprenticeship program. And worked in the field for about 15 years before I took this position, I guess about 6 or 7 years ago now. As far as our jurisdiction goes, we cover roughly 44,000 square miles, everything from Fredericksburg, south in Virginia, over from the Bristol border and southwest to Virginia Beach and Accomack out east.
So what happened with North Carolina? Is I take it another locals deciding to work that area?
The North Carolina Carpenters Union had been interested in working in that area, and we hadn't had the resources to be down in that area as much as we'd like. We still help them with work on the other side of the border, providing workers if we get into northern North Carolina if they need assistance. So happy to be working with those guys.
I gotcha. How many members in 205 right now, Jason?
We probably have about 600 members in the Central Virginia area, 2,200 across the state.
That's pretty good. Is that number up, down, going up, especially now with this infrastructure bill? What are you hearing?
I'd say that it had been on the rise, and we had a few setbacks during the pandemic, but have been able to at least maintain our membership, and work hours have actually gone up. So as we've been maintaining, we've been increasing the amount of work we've been doing still.
Very good. Well, we'll get into the specifics of that infrastructure bill, because every state in America is going to benefit from that, including the state of Virginia. But getting back, you mentioned that you got into the apprenticeship program right out of high school. What drove you that way? Were you had union members in your family, parents, carpenters? What's the story on that?
Yeah, I'll tell on myself a little bit here. Being 18 years old and ignorant, I'm a fourth generation union carpenter. You know, so at this age, as I'm getting out of high school, I just asked my dad, who had been a union member prior, you know, I think I want to get into construction. What do I do? And he says, you just go down to the union hall and take a test, and they're going to train you how to do everything. And that was it, you know, got in. But never really realized, even though I had friends working in construction trades, that people were out here working non-union. I thought everybody had benefits and stuff like that, but everybody just went down to the union hall and signed up, which you don't. You don't hear much of that in the state of Virginia, fourth-generation union members so often. So feel fortunate that our families benefited so much from the movement.
Yeah, I want to get into the politics there, because Virginia has long been a right-to-work state, which means you got people in a union that don't have to pay the dues, and that's so unfortunate. And I know there was an effort to try to turn that around, but we'll save that a little bit later. You mentioned union versus non-union carpenters. I had this conversation, and I have this conversation with many union brothers and sisters, the difference, I call it the union difference. In the state of Virginia, maybe you could run down what carpenters make in a union versus not in the union. Go ahead.
Yeah, union workers typically do make more. We have seen a change in the non-union wages in the area, and I like to attribute that to some of the good work we've been doing in the area and some of the legislation that's been passed. The incoming Build Back Better plan, that definitely seems to be impacting wages in a positive way for everyone. We actually have a contract negotiation coming up this year, and we're expecting some decent raises. The non-union, I would say, certain companies in the area that have a lot of work are paying competitively in the pocket, but the benefits are where the difference is made. These non-union carpenters out here, they're still not receiving the health care. If their company provides it, and a lot of times they can't afford it. And you hear similar things with what's happening with the retirement, their 401k, if it's even offered, compared to our pension plan, which honestly just isn't a comparison at all.
When it comes to pensions, are you going more the defined benefits versus defined contribution? The defined contribution would be more like the 401k. What's the status over there in Virginia for the construction industry?
So we have had a defined benefit plan, and we actually changed about a year or two, I guess, to a variable rate plan, which benefits our contractors as far as not impacting them with a withdrawal liability that will scare new contractors from signing a union contract a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Jason, what about organizing over there? I'm just wondering, you mentioned the non-union folks, their wages are going up. And I've seen that especially in the auto industry when you see these transplants like Honda, Toyota. And if they're, depending on where they're located, their wages are pretty close to UAW wages. Not exactly the same, but to your point, benefits are different. And I'm just wondering, is there an effort going on over there to organize some of those non-union shops? What's the story on that?
There absolutely is, and we've seen an influx of minority workers joining our union. We're a firm believer in getting out here and trying to help the people that are the most vulnerable that are being taken advantage of. the most. And we're actually running a campaign called CMOS, which is urging workers to ask for more, not necessarily to join the union. Obviously, the more the merrier as far as we're concerned. But we're also encouraging workers in the area that might not have the ability to be organized in to ask their boss to provide them with power tools or wage raises or benefits, even overtime pay in some cases.
Has that been effective so far?
We have seen it on certain high-profile job sites have an impact on the workers' wages in the area for sure. And contractors do seem to be taking serious safety more seriously. Early on in the pandemic, there were some things going on the job sites that union work or non-union workers were not happy with. I know on one project specifically, we spoke with some workers that were not receiving overtime pay. We were able to talk to the company and get them to correct that.
And that being said, did you see more organizing during the pandemic? I know it affected the work because of people getting sick on the job. I mean, I get that part. Construction was still moving forward during the pandemic. But a lot of people realized the benefits of the union during the pandemic. Did you take advantage of that? Did you see pockets of organizing as a result?
We did everything that we could. Like to think that we take every opportunity to be out here organizing new members and contractors into our union. And during the pandemic, we had to be aggressive and creative at the same time. Early on, when we weren't sure what was the best way to contact, we did set up Zoom meetings or video calls, you know, to have member outreach and things of that nature to bring new people in. But things, as we have learned more going through the pandemic, we've been able to take precautions to organize people in safely.
Jason, what about wage theft? I know that's a big issue. Well, in two industries, in trucking, we've seen what's happened out in the West Coast and independent contractors. And as a result, there's a lot of people not getting the money they should be getting. And in the construction industry. What's the status in Virginia with regard to wage theft? And I guess this is a two-part question. What are you doing to fight back? What's the story there?
Yeah, so glad you asked that question. Great question. And, you know, wage theft is our organization's number one issue across the United States and Canada that we're pushing back on. And I think so often we don't realize what that is an attack on, but misclassifying workers as independent contractors is a direct attack on workers everywhere, especially unions, and it's an attempt to roll back every labor protection that's put in place for the last 140 years. We've seen it on some high-profile projects here in Virginia, including most recently the Virginia State General Assembly building that is ongoing. There were several labor brokers there, one that was paying by cash, a few others that were paying by check without deductions.
Oh boy.
And we were able to help some of those workers out. Two of the labor brokers that were on that site have lawsuits that are filed, class action opt-in lawsuits that have been filed against them. And most recently, one of those labor brokers was brought up on charges and pled guilty to 5 felony counts of embezzlement. With the investigation that went on that job. So it's great to see some of those changes happening in Virginia that has been right to work and, you know, kind of really, if we're being honest, just failing the worker, you know, a lot of times throughout history. The advantage always seems to go to businesses here in Virginia, which does always brag about being number one for business. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see the needle starting to move for workers a little bit here.
I like that. So that building you're talking about, that was a government building where the wage theft occurred. You said Virginia State General Assembly building. Is that right?
That is correct.
Wow. That's amazing. Would you be so kind? I have your email here after the show. I'd like to get that story. Did that get a lot of media over there when that happened?
It did get a good bit, and we'd be happy to send you a couple of links.
Yeah, Jason, I would think when you're dealing with a government building, they would have probably done more research into the contractors that were bidding on that. In your estimation, in your knowledge, I'm sure, did these contractors that worked on that building? Did they have a history of ripping off workers?
I'm glad you asked that question as well. We actually met with the Department of General Services about a year prior to the project to warn them of some bad acting contractors. And one of those contractors was on the project and has been involved in this investigation.
Which brings to mind responsible contracting language. Don't they have that, especially when they're bidding on a public project like that, to show that, well, if you have a history of ripping off workers, you shouldn't even be involved in the bidding process. Did any of that happen?
There is a debarment process involved at the state level. The problem that we tend to see with any investigation, whether it's a state job or not, and there's a history of a contractor using labor brokers, any of the charges that are filed are always filed on the labor broker, and they just don't pass up to the company that's actually using the labor brokers to cheat their workers. And that has been the case on this project.
What a story. Carpenters205.org is the website. We're speaking with Jason Wheeler. Jason, you can stay with us for another segment here on the show. Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, I want to get into right to work, the politics in the state of Virginia. Later in the show, Greg Regan will be joining us on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings. Let's go back to Virginia right now. Rejoin Jason Wheeler on behalf of Carpenters Local 205. Pretty much cover the entire state of Virginia, big chunk of it anyway. Jason, I want to talk about the politics. Virginia, longtime right-to-work state. I want to see if any of that might be changing. But I did catch this on your website, Mix 2020. And apparently your local dispatches jobs through this system. It's an automated system. I was kind of curious about that. Can you share with us what this is all about?
Yeah, the Mix 2020 system is a great system. As you pointed out, it's kind of an automated dispatch system. And we do tend to use that for larger projects like a scaffold shutdown, or if we Have a major call out for some concrete workers or some interior systems carpenters. Generally, we do call member to member if we get asked for, you know, two, three, four guys from a contractor. But these major calls do go out. It's first come, first serve. Anybody that's qualified, has the proper certifications for the project, they simply press one to accept the job, and it dispatches them out to the contractor, gives them all the information that they need to make it to the job site, and sends their information over to the contractor. And it's been working out great.
How long has it been in effect?
I'd say here we've probably been using it for about the last 3 to 4 years. Okay, but I know in the council area, they have been using it for an extended period of time.
Well, anything that makes it easier and more efficient. So definitely good. Mix 2020. All right, Jason, what's going on with right to work? I know you got a new governor. In fact, the state kind of moved farther to the right there. I know there was an opportunity by some of your lawmakers there to nix right to work. It just didn't have enough legs, but, what's the status and what are people saying about it right now?
Yeah, there is another bill coming forward to repeal it. My personal feeling is it would have a little bit of trouble making it to the governor's desk, and I doubt it would go much further than that since the state has moved a little further to the right, back to being a little more pro-business. But it was a huge victory for labor as a whole. Back in 2016, there was a move to actually amend the Constitution of Virginia and embed right to work within it. And voters actually chose to not amend the Constitution and keep right to work out of it. We saw that as a signal to try to go after it and have it repealed. And unfortunately, we're not successful when there was a more liberal majority. And, you know, we do have friends on both sides of the aisle here in Virginia that we're working with, and that's how we've been successful getting some of the other bills passed, like a contractor liability bill, a private right of action. There used to be a ban on project labor agreements with labor organizations in Virginia. Believe it or not, we were able to get that repealed. So we've been fortunate to do some good work here legislatively, labor as a whole, not just the carpenters. But it will be interesting to see how this next 4 years is going to go for workers for sure.
So, Jason, that effort to put right to work in the Constitution, was that an overwhelming victory or what? Or was it a narrow margin on that one?
It was more of a narrow margin. And Southwest Virginia actually played a key role in it. It was pretty split everywhere else, but Southwest Virginia, which tends to be a little more conservative, actually had stronger numbers out there for wanting to keep it out of the Constitution.
Yeah, once it's in the Constitution, you're done. Jason, I know the state of Tennessee also is trying to put right to work in the Constitution there, and labor's organized on that one. We'll have to check in with them and see how that's going, but I know that effort is underway. It's sad that politicians have to go in that direction, and that's why we have this Protect the Right to Organize piece of legislation, which would essentially ban right to work in America. You mentioned the Build Back Better legislation. I'm just wondering, you get a lot of support for that? Because I know Biden's trying to get that thing rolling, and I know there's Joe Manchin in your neighboring state over there that's been kind of a stick in the mud on that. But what's the talk in Virginia about that bill?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of support for it, especially through our organization. Our contractors are excited about it, and I think a lot of workers in the area are excited about it. I mean, anytime you're going to be bringing billions of dollars of construction work to Virginia and it's going to be purchased through the government, you know there's going to be some Davis Bacon wages on there. And whether the work is union or not, the workers that are doing it, they are going to be paid properly. They are going to be protected at least at some level, instead of it just being the Wild West like we see out here on so many of these projects in the state.
I hear you. Now, the infrastructure bill, are you seeing any of that money coming in? Any projections on probably, I'm sure you're going to have to ramp up some of your apprenticeship programs for that, because I'm hearing pretty good news all around the country. What's your take on that?
We are absolutely putting an emphasis on bringing in new members, especially apprentices, in the coming months to try to ramp up for the work that is coming. There's a ton of bridge and road work coming, and we are hoping to get that along with the commercial industrial buildings that we typically do.
I would imagine, too, with Washington, D.C., is Washington, D.C. is part of your jurisdiction, right?
That's just north of us, actually. Local 197, which is a part of our same council, covers that area.
Okay. Well, you probably get some of the work as a result that comes out of Washington. You know, in Washington, there's a lot of money there, a ton of money.
Oh, yeah.
That'll filter to all the trades. All right. Sounds good. Jason Wheeler joining us on our live line, Carpenters 205. Website is carpenters205.org, which is also their Twitter handle. You can also check them out on Facebook. Jason, any parting words here for our audience?
Thanks so much for having us today. Glad to be talking with you. If you're out there organizing, keep on fighting the good fight. Now's a great time for workers in America. Truly, I think we can get unions back on the roadmap to success, and workers need it now more than ever.
I hear you, brother. You take care. Stay safe. We'll talk down the road, okay?
Thanks a lot. Great talking to you.
Jason Wheeler on our live line, Carpenters Local 205. Quick break. Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll-free at 1-800-443-3752.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to our live line, rejoin one of our regulars here each and every month. We check in with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD.org. Hey, Greg, how we doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good. A little chilly, lots of snow in northeastern Ohio. And how are things in Washington? You had that crazy storm a couple of weeks ago along I-95.
Yeah. Fortunately, I wasn't on the roads for it, but you know, it's back to being snowless here for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. I heard people were stuck for 27 hours. Boy, that a lot of people not happy campers. No doubt about that. No doubt.
No.
Greg, I want to talk about some changes here. Apparently, your coalition, the Transportation Trades Department is growing with several new affiliates. And some of these, I guess, were reaffiliated. We're talking about the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers. Talk to me. What happened here? Explain this.
Yeah, well, this is obviously very exciting for us. This is a big moment for transportation labor in particular with the big infrastructure bill. And, you know, we had been talking to the BLET and the BMWE, both Teamster affiliates, about rejoining T2D for years now. And this just seemed like a really perfect moment to reunite and most importantly, to bring rail labor all under one umbrella for the first time since 2005. So, you know, as we're staring down a number of challenges, including, you know, precision scheduled railroading, which we've discussed, and a number of other things, and implementing the infrastructure bill, this is a great time to have rail unions speaking with a unified voice once again.
Talk to me about the Painters and Allied Trades. I thought that was kind of interesting. How did that happen, and why did that happen?
Yeah, again, we've talked to them. I think this is a reflection of the fact that, the painters recognize that we are stronger together in every facet of the labor movement. And, you know, they have a lot of members who do a lot of infrastructure work, whether it be painting on bridges or other built-out infrastructure. And, you know, this is a moment where, in order to get this right, in order to make sure that we're investing this money in a way that builds good union jobs, they recognize, and we recognize, that having us all speak together is an important part of this.
Well, there's a lot that's going to happen here under this infrastructure bill. I mean, this thing is huge. I mean, it's well over $1 trillion. So we're going to see a lot of money going into the states. And you're going to hear a lot of people taking credit for it, even though they didn't vote for it.
That's for sure, yeah.
That seems to happen quite a lot, especially now in Washington. Talk to me about this Federal Railroad Administrator. And I guess the Senate just confirmed, is his name Amit Bose? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Amit Bose, yes. But he's, so we were big supporters of his from early on after Biden was elected. He is a really smart guy. He's been at the FRA for a long time and understands the administration and understands the value the workers and unions bring to our railroad system. For me, the biggest frustration is that it took him almost a year to actually get confirmed. And, you know, when you look at everything that's been happening over the past year since he was nominated, the supply chain problems and some of the safety concerns we've seen, the fact that he was held up for that long is really just a shame. And I have a lot of faith in him. He's been the acting administrator, but, he's got a lot of work to do in the next 3 years here to deliver on the administration's promise when it comes to rail. But every time I hear people complaining, especially on the right, about the fact that, you know, the administration hasn't done enough to prevent the supply chain or, you know, hasn't done this, well, maybe you should have confirmed the people that he picked to run these agencies. And, you know, we're really excited that he's there, but it's a shame that it took this long.
Greg, why did it take so long? What was the problem with the conservatives?
It's politics. It's politics. You know, there were, you could hear any number of complaints from senators who had various holds on him. One of them was Rick Scott, who was complaining about, the fact that there weren't oversight hearings on supply chain and that the administration wasn't doing enough to avert the supply chain crisis. And meanwhile, one of the people who had been key in fighting this had not been confirmed, which was Amit. Another person had complaints about the fact that he hadn't rubber stamped, a automatic track inspection waiver, a waiver, mind you, because, again, this was that was something the previous administration would have done. And this administrator decided he wanted to take a look at that waiver. So they put a hold on him.
Yeah.
So, it's just little political things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to make Biden look bad. I mean, exactly. I understand what they're doing. Speaking of which, Biden obviously just passed his first year in office, and he is getting beat up in the media big time. And I have to salute the Transportation Trades Department, which you handle, and so many in labor. This email went out on Friday on behalf of the AFL-CIO showing what Biden has done And Greg, from your mouth, tell us, give us a couple of examples of what happened on his watch. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we really need to keep all this stuff in perspective in terms of what he truly accomplished in 1 year in office. Starting with the Recovery Act, which was one of the most significant pieces of legislation at the right time that we could have possibly enacted. We did get a lot of stuff done before that in terms of rescuing our economy in the midst of this pandemic. But what he did, especially in terms of transportation, in terms of rescuing transit, passenger rail, aviation, across the board, worker safety protections built into that bill, requirement that Amtrak recall the workers who had been furloughed, requirements that transit systems maintain employment and maintain service routes. I mean, all that stuff was in that bill, and it truly rescued transportation systems across the country at a time when they needed it most. And that was just, and that was within the first, month of his administration. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward to the end of the year, and we passed the single largest investment, one-time investment infrastructure in the history of our country. And that's not just, one mode. That goes across every mode, and it includes things like greening of our infrastructure through electric vehicle charging stations. Frankly, the investment in transit and passenger rail is one of the most important things you can do to green our infrastructure system. And those are the biggest investments in the history of either of those modes of transportation. It's true for bridge construction and roads. It's true for schools and broadband and our electrical grid. This is a really big deal, and we're just now starting to see the money start to flow. And I think people are going to realize, as this gets out there and as we start to see improvements in every community across the country, what a significant accomplishment that was.
You think it's just going to be a matter of time before the poll numbers turn around on this? And I know people are getting hit with inflation. I mean, I get that. But you take a look. Well, look at the job picture. How many people got jobs? I know there's a lot of people resigning, but when they resign, they go for a better job. That's happening in America. That's not getting the fair play. But there's Build Back Better too. We've got that piece of legislation. So what's your thoughts going forward?
Yeah, I think Build Back Better is probably our last bite at the apple in terms of big legislation in this Congress, certainly, and potentially depending on what happens in the midterms and the in this presidency when it comes to big, defining pieces of legislation. And I think there's a lot in there that's extremely popular in this country. And I hope that we can collectively sell the American people on why this is important and get it across the finish line. But in terms of poll numbers and in terms of people understanding the value that government and this administration brought, a lot of it's going to be in terms of when this stuff is actually delivered. That's why this infrastructure bill is so important, implementing it in the right way. We need the project delivered quickly, of course, so that people start to see the benefits of it. But it also needs to be done the right way so that we're seeing the job growth and the growth in wages and benefits that are promised in this thing. And I think as we start to see that, and if people are good, if Democrats are good at selling this and explaining it and explaining what the accomplishments were, I think you're going to see this start to turn around, because there are going to be real tangible benefits for everybody in this country.
Greg, when do you see that happening? When do you think that money is going to start filtering in?
Well, we've already started seeing it. They just announced last week the bridge money, the formula funding, went out. That is a first step. I know that the administration is hyper-focused on getting the rest of the formula money out, and then also the grant rules to make sure that people that are applying for this money can do it in an expeditious manner. So it'll be soon. After the money goes out, of course, there is still planning processes and things like that need to be done. But I think we're going to see it move quicker than I think we're used to when it comes from to government programs like this.
Well, we'll see what happens. Greg, great job as usual. Greg Regan, who heads the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. For more information, ttd.org. You take care, my friend. We'll talk next month, okay?
Thank you. You too. Take care.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, and Iron Workers Local 44. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.